So in his pastoralist, first teacher was this man called Robert King, and really was his principal teacher, although he later on went on to work with Dion Fortune. He went to work with her in the Inner Light as somebody who already had was an experienced occultist and had done a lot of inner work. But the person he first worked with was this man called Robert King, who was a bishop in the Liberal Catholic Church, which is an offshoot of the Theosophical Society. And he had been very active in that. But at the time when Ernest knew him, that he had withdrawn from all public kind of public teaching, and was teaching small groups really, and about three or four people. And he had somewhere that was near the British Museum, little house near the British Museum. And one of the features that I remember always Ernest talking about, how they used to sit in this rather cosy gas-lit room. So it was lit by gaslight, not by electric light. And they used to meet up once a week, he and a couple of other people. And this is where Ernest learned the Kabbalah, essentially. And there's almost nothing written by Robert King at all. I mean, there's a little article floating about somewhere about the esoteric use of the Lord's Prayer, but nothing really about his Kabbalistic work. And in a certain sense, it wasn't like a scripted kind of training. So they would meet up once a week, and what used to happen is that Robert King would tune in to his inner teacher, and they would do exercises, they would do meditations, or the inner teacher would address them. And he would address them by Robert King going into not unconscious trance, but a conscious form of trance, where the presence of the priest with the mask of Anubis would sort of step forward, and Robert King would step back, so their consciousnesses fused and they spoke as one. What they would do then is actually stuff like we're doing it in quite a different way, but they would take an element of the tree. They might take the Sephira Malkut, and they would contemplate it together and slightly free associate together, and then they would be given the task for that next week would be to explore the Sephira Malkut inside you and around you. So you would notice the ideas of solidity, sovereignty. You'd notice the interplay of the four elements in Malkut. You'd consider also the image of the archangel Sandalphon as the prince of prayer. So you'd contemplate, well, what does this mean? If we think of this archangel as being the prince of prayer? And we also have to think, classically, Sandalphon is seen as feminine. So we have the feminine prince of prayer. What does that mean exactly? So the way in which Ernest worked really, and in a way it's partly how Tom and Ernest trained me, was by taking little pieces of the tree and kind of working with them, puzzling over them, integrating them little by little with your life. So that you build the tree as an internal structure, and at the same time you're using it as a lens to look through. Right. So when you look at one part of the tree, you're privileging with your attention one part of existence. So today we're looking at the 31st path. So we're privileging this place of the bringing together of mind and body, the bringing together and this place, this path of resurrection. This idea of the law of judgment, of wakening up. So we're looking at things intensely through that lens. So it's a fiery path. So we're looking at this sense of fiery waking up. which can be all kinds of things. It can be inspiration, can be irritation, can be something that starts to create friction. And so we notice that in ourselves, and we notice that in the universe. Well, that's one whole line of the teaching. The other important piece of the teaching really is the working with the energy body, working with the body of light. And that's where the Kabbalistic cross, the middle pillar, and the interwoven light exercises come in. So that was a very strong part of Ernest's training with Robert King. And the as we go on with it, we'll explore some parts of this. But as you work with the middle pillar, as you work with those exercises, you start to bring energy into your system. Moreover, you start to experience yourself as an energetic form as well as a physical form. Another part of the work is the working with the energy body as the body of prayer and blessing. And it's the sort of thing that's classically talked about as astral projection, where your energetic field opens and expands and can embrace situations that are not immediately local. And then I used to tell this kind of story of with help from Robert King, how he suddenly found himself outside his body, and the feeling the and he, I mean, he talked very beautifully about it, really, about how that experience of himself not unconscious of his body, but his location being elsewhere in a wider field of life. Really opened him to the sense of the reality of these things. Again, that it's not some internal cognitive exercise, but actually the world is bigger, is wider. And in a way that links in really with the third aspect of the work, which was the work of prayer. You know, they used to work a great deal with prayer. So having contemplated things, having worked with energy, they would then bring those qualities together into the act of prayer, into the act of addressing that which needs addressing, noticing what is out of balance, not just in themselves, but in the world. You know, and it's a sort of, Ernest, I suppose, was very lucky in that sense. He was able to do that bit by bit, week by week, as in very, you know, so you do a little bit, and eventually it builds up into a whole kind of internal way of being, really, that enables you to potentize your life. You know, we haven't got the luxury of that because we don't live so near each other, but we're using the same principles in a way. Of each month, we will. So this month, coming month, we will be looking at this art of resurrection. And we're looking at the birth of the child, and we'll be looking at the birth of the child during the Christmas season, which is nice. I mean, I hadn't planned it that way, but that's how it's worked out. So it's actually the sense of the Christ child, of the new life emerging in the midst. At the coldest time of the year, right in the middle of deep winter, the emergence of new life.
Could you clarify, please? It's so important. What do you mean? What do you think they meant by prayer? Prayer is all important. Most people see prayer as a cosmic lottery, you know, and making a prayer is like buying a ticket. You see what I mean?
Prayer is the opening of the heart. It's the act of vulnerability. It's the act of asking for help. It's the act of also wishing well. Mm-hmm. So classically in the Kabbalah, there are this phrase, tikkun nefesh, tikkun olam. The healing of the soul is the healing of the world. So the the act of prayer is the bringing into the heart something that is out of order, something that is disordered, either in ourselves or in the world, or with our friend, and whatever, wherever we find it. So it's the bringing of that into the heart. And now this is the heart of prayer is described in the central section of the book, really the principal practice of healing and transforming the klipot, where you having practiced these exercises, you have the capacity within yourself to bring into your heart that which has become lost, that which has become separated. You restore the great phrase from the Judaism of returning something to the great bundle of the living. So you bring the painful place, the sad place, the lost place back into the heart. It's that image of the kind of the shepherd finding the lost sheep and bringing the lost sheep home, and then holding this lost and broken energy in the heart until the warmth of the heart softens it and enables it to relax and to be transformed into new form. And that's the place where you do need enormous help. So that's where the place you invite in what represents the divine for you, that is the quality that does the work. It's always the Ruach Elohim, the holy breath that does the transformation. Hanukkah is, I think, on Monday. Yes. Yeah, I think it's dealt on Monday. It's the festival of lights, yes. So they keep adding there's a nine-branched menorah that they use where they keep adding lights. So it's shining the lights on the brokenness of things, and shining the light despite the brokenness, and holding up the light. Yeah.
So the therapist and the magician do the same thing, but have a different take on it, really, in holding the image of the ideal and yet acknowledging the brokenness.
Well, it's the bringing of those two things together, in a sense, right? It's part of this whole practice of working with the opposites, where there is, you embrace the broken, the lost, the places of disconnection, and bring that into relationship with that which is connected, it is whole. And it's an act of mediation, really, in that place, the act of bridging, that enables that, that's the bid bond thing, for who would be ahead must be a bridge. And, it's that, that great Mabinogi image of Brahm laying his body down so that the war of opposite effectively happens within the body, within the heart, and then something else happens. That extraordinary thing in the Tennyson poem where there's enormous battle until the moment of surrender, and then everything stops, that image of the living and the dead in complete stillness because the war has ended. Well, it's a big question, that, isn't it? What, one of the great questions of what continues.
Can I say it in a simpler way?
Aye.
The distinction between soul continuing and ego continuing because it hasn't learned what it needed to learn.
Yeah, I think that Buddhism has a different take on this from the Kabbalah. I mean, because the idea, a reincarnation in Buddhism would be the reincarnation is a sort of a failure, is it, because you haven't managed to get enlightened. Whereas in the Kabbalah has this idea of the reincarnation as a positive thing, where you return to deepen, to enrich the world, and I think the sense of what continues is interesting. So when Tom said to me, "My father brought Blackie to see me," right? Now, obviously, Blackie's body, his uncle's body, long gone, but what he is saying and believing, and I suppose what I also say and believe, is that there is continuity. So there is a presence, a recognizable presence, that isn't the same, isn't identical to the person as they were. In a sense, is that person expanded, maybe, or developed, you know, but still recognizable. And that is different from the experience, or the other experience one can have, I have had, of people who cannot pass through the veil of death, who become, in a certain sense, earthbound, and who become solidified around the sense of who they were and the life they had.
Yeah.
And so that's a very different thing, whereas the sense of the resurrected person, to use that word, is a sense of an expanded person, magnified in a way, but still recognizably themselves. And I guess it's a different, you know, Buddhism has a different take on this, really, there's a kind of fundamental kind of difference, I suppose, really, where the focus on Buddhism is on not being born again. Focus in the Kabbalah is being of service and being willing to be born again as an act of service. As also, of course, an act of learning. So, but it's not seen as something that's wrong. It's a positive outcome in some ways.
So it's okay to use Blackie as a...
Yeah.
Yeah. So if Blackie was to reincarnate...
Yeah.
You then go into different dimensions. There's a reincarnated Blackie in a different time and space.
Yeah.
And there's a continuing Blackie.
Beyond time and space.
Beyond time and space, which
yeah.
Blackie.
Yeah.
That Ernest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there's something I'm losing here, but
well, we're talking there about, so if you like, there is a, well, you actually are pointing it to something interesting. So there is an aspect of us that is beyond time and space, and which any version of time and space is a partial expression of. Mm-hmm. Right, so that the, so that if you like, there's an eternal Duncan, yeah, who manifests in different times, different places, different shapes, different lives, having different names then. And then there is the Duncan that is met in each version of time and space. And so I guess when we're out of the movement of time and space, we're in the eternal nowness, the eternal simultaneousness. So then you are in relationship to all versions of yourself, and Tom would be in relation to all versions of Blackie, I guess, you know. So it and that's the thing that then does start to do your head in, because it's beyond our normal ways of understanding time, yeah, and space.
But that sounds like jet time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just jet. That would be jet time. Yeah. Yeah. That's the eternal moment.
There is such a sort of individual sense of a person and their soul. And it's a little bit more like what Ian just described, and it kind of fits quite well, both the Kabbalah and I suppose it's a more esoteric side of Buddhism, with like particle physics, and how light actually can exist and not exist at the same time in different parts of the universe.
So,
I find it sometimes a little bit that whole idea of reincarnation from a sort of classical Buddhist point of view is quite limited. Get into the study of the power practice and the talk practice, it's a lot more about that sense of being part of a creative process and creating different parts of yourselves, and they have different names for different aspects of existence. So you might have like what they call an enjoyment body or an emanation body or a secret body and a manifest body. Is this in part hard because we're talking about the systems that are from the mind?
Yeah, we're using the mind, we're using the creative aspect of mind. So this place where mind helps us to see and the structures of mind help us to touch into deeper things. That's absolutely part of what we're doing. Yeah. And that's the creative aspect of mind as opposed to the mind that can entrap in a way. So yeah. Okay, let's just sit for a moment. We need to finish, but let's just sit for a moment and I thank the archangels for holding us. Let's take a breath. We've all done a lot of work today, sitting in this strange, cold room. Thank God the next time we meet in this way it'll be March, so hopefully it'll be warmer. But anyway, for today anyway, just sitting, breathing, being aware, you've done a lot of work. Trusting that work and letting it kind of just settle inside you. And just being aware of the holding of the four great archangels. Royal Guardian of the North, Alchemist of Deep Heaven, we thank you for your holding and your blessing. Go in peace. Gabrielle, who stands in the West, we thank you for your inspiration, your clarity, your purity, your holding. Go in peace. Mikael, High Priest of Heaven, bringer of light and fire, we thank you for your warmth and your blessing. Go in peace. Raphael, we thank you for your healing power, your ability to begin. Your support of our beginnings. Go in peace. May we all go in peace. Thank you all very much. It's been a pleasure.